Hello, Valley of Flowers. You are listening to KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman, Gallatin Valley Community Radio. I am Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. This week, I am on the road, so I'm playing two episodes of Desert Oracle. The first is Owl Eyes View from July 7th, 2022. And the second is The Goofball Factor from May 10th, 2019. Enjoy.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. The end of a beautiful week up here in the Mojave, not too hot and just ideal from sundown to whenever you finally say goodbye to the night, which I've always had a hard time with. Some French philosopher, I'd know his name if I had a better education, I guess, said his least favorite parts of the day were getting up and going to bed. For as much as I've thought about those sentiments, you'd figure I'd figure out which philosopher. But the internet is of little help. Pretty much anything you search for, the results are the same. Pinterest pictures taken off an Etsy store. Marvel movies, fan art, people screaming about politics. And a bunch of ads for something you bought as a gift 7 years ago. Now, I like to wake up slowly, decide if I want to return to whatever dream. The morning dreams are most clear to me. And then just take it slowly if it's truly time to get up. You need to be careful because everything is ready to grind you down. Everything that's part of this garbage tournament we call the real world in the early 21st century. Which always excludes the actual real world, the birds up to their various tricks. The wind in the trees, the lizards scattering as you walk outside with your coffee. To investigate the late bloomers coming up in the shade. The roadrunner creeping around, looking to gleefully brain another ground squirrel. Because the moment you look at the phone, open the computer, it's garbage time. All of a sudden you have to print something on the worthless printer and that doesn't work. Because the ink dried up or got stuck in the nozzle and it wants a firmware update. Somebody you do not like but have to deal with about this one thing will have sent no less than 3 emails. Since last night, about something trivial and stupid. There will be junk mail from companies you've never heard of with a half dozen increasingly annoying steps required to unsubscribe to something you've never subscribed to. There will be junk mail in the physical mailbox too when you go down to the post office, and a lot of plain old fear like an IRS envelope that for reasons of pure institutional terrorism will contain not an audit notice, but a form letter from Joe Biden for some reason. Thanks for the heart attack. The letter's from the utility monopoly, the same one that fights every effort to let people put up solar panels and get off the deadly, dangerous power grid. Informing you that the power's being turned off again in a few days. Too bad for you that it's 100 degrees and there's not even a movie theater to hide within for the afternoon. Everything you touch will constantly demand updates, upgrades, factory service, shutdowns, installs. Click here to agree to everything to proceed. The bank websites are dead when you need to pay a bill or deposit a check, but they always work when they're taking your money. Every aspect of life in the 2020s is a scam run by a swarm of rats ever at your ankles. So it is no surprise, I suppose, that even the few person-to-person, non-transactional interactions are as poison with misery as the stuff run by the digital advertising companies that more or less run the whole simulation. It's easy to fall into the trap of being a gloomer. The gloomers mean well, usually, but part of that is a deep need to spread the gloom around, unfortunately. Thick as peanut butter or roach paste. It's a human instinct, too. Have you heard the news? For most of our human existence, that's what people did when they came across each other. At a crossroads, or maybe in a traveler's pub like in Canterbury Tales. People bring what they know from the four corners of the world, or the next town over at least. The problem now is that unless you witness the event yourself, the plane crash, or the sewage plant explosion, or the neighbor's chihuahua that exclusively walks on the roof, then everybody else either already knows about it or they have access to the same information and have chosen to do something else with their time at that moment. It's disturbing to see younger people falling into these habits because for so long it was the old people who had the monopoly on being gloomers. You would have the holiday dinner or whatever with the old people, maybe after your high school graduation. And they lock eyes with you and begin telling you about all your distant relatives, most of whom you've never met, and how they are dying. Oh yes, they are dying. Slowly, of course, so the story can drag on for the next several years of family gatherings. Did you hear the terrible news about Aunt Flooper? Who? Aunt Flooper. Well, she's not your real aunt, I suppose, but she's the one Uncle Knacker married after Smooty got the cancer. Great Uncle Knacker, I mean. Brofer's boy, your grandma's half-brother. Who? Because there is growing acknowledgement that the Earth's environment, our environment, is in some trouble. Well-meaning people want to share the bad news, of course. They care about it, and it's natural to share news, I know. But we all have the same news now. We all have the same news on our evil little phones, on our dumb computers. It's always there. We're just trying to get something done, find out what time the Mexican restaurant closes, make sure the check cleared, that kind of thing. And yet now you know that the former Prime Minister of Japan was shot 20 minutes ago in Japan. Why do I need to know that right now? In the Mojave Desert, where my closest neighbor is a half mile away. In a place that didn't even have electricity or running water when I was born. Let alone a 24-hour Associated Press newswire hooked up to the typewriter. I open the notifications tab on the Desert Oracle thing on Twitter, and five people have sent the same bad news, all sent within a few minutes of the others. The bristlecone pines are dying. The ancient bristlecones are in danger, I know. Yeah, I was reporting on pine borer infestations in western conifers 3 decades ago. They're dying because the Southwest is drying up. Drying up, heating up, which makes the trees more susceptible to beetles that eat up the trees. A Forest Service biologist working around Palomar Mountain laid it all out for me. I think it was 1990. It's getting hotter. It's getting drier. There's much less snowpack. Stressed pine trees, whether ancient bristlecones or the pinyons in the San Bernardino Mountains, are easy prey for pine beetles, both native and invasive. Drought-stressed trees have no defense against the pine borers. The usual defense is pitch, the pine sap. But when the tree is too dry to produce enough pitch, well, the little beetles get into the tree and they eat and eat and they kill the tree. So I dutifully put all of this in a big newspaper article, which was dutifully put on the front page with a color photograph of dead trees amongst living trees. And it won the California Newspaper Publishers Award for Environmental Reporting that year. A job well done by one and all, and climate change was averted. Or not, it turns out. To slow that process and have hope for reversing it, we just need to do a rapid decarbonization of the global industrial economy, which has not happened with any of the speed and seriousness of purpose that is required. I know. So here we are. The Colorado River reservoirs are empty, I know. Wood hasn't burned in the previous 2 decades of never-before wildfires will burn in the coming decades, I know, you know. We aren't the people who need the cudgel in the mouth. And yet that's what we do to each other. Have you heard the bad news? Is it going to address that world-ending issue in any way at all, or just shovel one person's depression and endless anxiety onto another human being who already shares an understanding of the larger issue? Even if you ignore the news, you know the news. They play the news on the little video screens while you get your $6 a gallon gas. And then there's a clip of Jimmy Fallon or somebody. And he's, I don't know, he's got a monkey on his desk or something and he's fingering it. There's no escape. You can limit it, and you should, but there's no escape. Look up in the beautiful night sky if you live far enough away from the Home Depot Klieg lights, and there goes another line of Elon Musk internet satellites. Because that's something I want to think about when looking at the glory of the night sky. Billionaire internet troll and never being able to escape the internet. Did you see the fight between the two full-time internet entertainers over the proper age to bring your toddlers to the pornography convention? No, I don't care. Aren't you trembling with rage and screaming at the walls about what they did to a Disney Star Wars character or a chicken sandwich or a Supreme Court decision that was announced 6 weeks previous, but everybody apparently forgot about it because of mass murder sprees? Or the Loud Boys packed into a budget brand rental truck or whatever? No. We are in a time of chaos. It's not going to change anytime soon, and it's hardly the first time of chaos. Last night I was standing outside looking at the crescent moon when I noticed something flying above at probably 100 feet in elevation. I could just barely make out the shape, but that creamy color reflected from the moonlight. Well, that, my friends, is the underside of a great horned owl. From up there, you could see the roads of this charmless little desert neighborhood and a charmless little desert town. You could see the two bright vapor lights over the garages filled with a dozen varieties of motor vehicle. And down the highway to the supermarket parking lot where dozens of people are living in broken down RVs. The ugly highway with its mostly closed down service road retail. The dumpsters full of single use plastic and cat box clumps. The $50,000 giant pickup trucks with the balding budget tires because the drivers lack the liquidity to service their $700 a month finance death tanks. But the owl sees much more than these vulgarities. From its vantage point above this vile little valley, it sees where the headlights and the porch lights cannot. It sees the dry washes just behind the ridge where the rodents scamper through the sand and try to make it under the willow before the talons snap their necks. It sees the water holes that persist even in the decades of drought that will make up its entire life. Just as the soiled and imperfect world of today will make up your entire life. And in its dinosaur brain, being part of the last branch of the dinosaurs who've lived and thrived on this planet through so many changes over the past 230 million years or so, It knows that time is long and life is short. Would it prefer an unbroken landscape of Joshua Tree highlands and woodland crowned with pinyons that still shielded patches of snow in late springtime? Where swooping down for dinner did not mean getting smashed by the front grill of an Amazon Prime semi-truck? Probably. If it was cursed with the ability to drive itself nutty with an interior monologue full of doubt and shame and trivia. Take the bird's eye view if you can. Your time is the only time you'll ever know. Is this it? This is it. We don't know much about the specifics of the mystery religions of the ancient world. That's why they're mysteries. But the philosophers and historians and even emperors who took part in the mysteries emerged from the community rituals with a great sense of ease, of comfort with life as it is, how it begins and how it ends for us in this form. Not as we might be, not as things could be, but as they are. The bird's eye view of history, both short-term and long-term, was a crucial part of the wisdom you took away from the fantastic spectacle in those subterranean chambers. But we can learn to do that right now, too. Go ahead or go up. We know what it looks like. We can fill it in pretty well. We figured out satellite view on the phone map. Look at yourself where you are, inside or outside, and just go up from there. Maybe it's a campground. Maybe it's an apartment building. Maybe it's your car in traffic or on an open road. All those people doing whatever they do around you. Paying bills or losing it because they can't pay the bills. Cops looking for heads to crack. Taxis and Ubers carrying drunks and disappointed Tinder dates. Drive-through hamburger chains about the only thing open at night anymore. Except maybe over in the lively neighborhood, which you can see too. A little bit of humanity. People enjoying each other's company, but ever alert for the pop, pop, pop of the shooter. The office towers in downtown. Lights on and nobody even works there anymore. The helicopter pads up top for the military choppers and the death squads. Always at the ready. The billboards advertising the pointlessly bloody fair on the streaming services. And in the darkness all around, those increasingly concentrated globs of light on the map, the creatures are holding out as best they can. It's funny how we think wildlife prefers the difficult terrain of jagged mountains and dense tree cover. Most wildlife, given the chance, would prefer a pleasant valley, meadows, grasslands, easy trails, the lakes and rivers and streams which naturally occur in the low places. But we've chased the animals up into these mountainous hideouts because there's not much left. Since the people built their suburbs and Costcos and tax-subsidized stadiums for billionaire football team owners in the valleys and the easy places. In fact, from up here, you can see what it was like before. Switch your brain to the view of the terrain. Now you see it clearly. And you know that in not too many years, that hive of humanity may well be covered in centuries of silt and soil. Maybe just enough sticking out of a grassland to give some future archaeologist a starting point. I wonder what was here. Ah, another million video game controllers. Sometimes. Try it when you're driving, when you're walking, when you're sitting on a park bench. Careful you don't peg yourself with those spikes they build into the park benches now, so a person without a bed can't rest late at night a few feet off the ground. Look around in time and space. Everything keeps on happening, doesn't it? Sometimes it's brutal, sometimes it's lovely, usually it's a little of both. Because the lion doesn't lie down with the lamb until the lamb's good and dead. From Amboy to Zizix and across the great Mojave Wilderness and beyond, this is Desert Oracle Radio. Broadcasting on Friday nights at 10 p.m. in Joshua Tree, Yucca Valley, 29 Palms, Pipes Canyon, Wonder Valley. Wherever you are in the Mojave High Desert on this beautiful early summer evening. And if you're somewhere else, well, that's okay too. Get the podcast wherever you do that. Or listen to KZMU and Moab on Saturday nights. And we are on about another dozen stations, thanks to all the program directors for that. If you work for or volunteer at a community radio station, why not put Desert Oracle on the air? Lord knows there's a lot of filler on the radio at night, when it should be interesting. Our paperback edition of Desert Oracle Volume 1 is in bookstores now from Picador Books. And you may not believe it, but I'm making good progress on issue number 10 of our Desert Oracle periodical, which means there is truly hope for getting these next and probably last four quarterly issues out as scheduled between now and next summer, if we make it that long. And we will. A lot of us, anyway. Thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver for the soundscapes tonight and to KCDZ 107.7 FM for being our radio home. Good night from the voice of the desert.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California. Now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
It is nighttime in the desert, and there's a lot of work going on. I sure hate to admit it, but everybody's sort of hurrying up a little bit, because the hot months are coming. It gets a little tougher to take care of the chores in the summertime. You just want to crawl back into the burrow with the tortoises. Wait it out. You know, I had this list. I had the radio shows that had to be done, and I'm fixing up this house. I've been trying to flip houses with Brendan Mays. He's got an LLC, and it's really more trouble than it's worth. He keeps bringing in these friends of his, and he says they're good for the money. And you get a 2-day drop in the stock market, and these guys are long gone already. They're over-leveraged. And then the new books come in, and the semi-truck is out there parked in the middle of the highway, which always seems insane. I've never seen a truck do that in the desert here. I don't think I've ever seen that outside of the Balkans. The truck just stops in the middle lane of Highway 62, and down come the pallets off the lift gate. And these guys just wheel the pallets across 2 lanes of traffic. It's like Eddie Murphy and Bowfinger, except they don't care at all. There's no screaming and crying. But friends, let me tell you, they stop the traffic on the highway for the Desert Oracle. I sure hope nobody finds out about this at the Sheriff's Department. Are all huffing and puffing and wiping their brows, and I've got my hat on trying to keep the sun out of my eyes so I can see, so I don't get run over by a convoy of tanks out of 29 Palms. And of course the pallets are for warehouses, but all I've got is this one regular door. You kind of have to stand sideways just to get in. So the boxes are getting loaded off the pallets. And now there's a line of workers, a line of teamsters. The box is going from one strong set of arms to the next. And I guess the moment just sort of overtook me, and I started saying, "Careful, boys, careful now. Real easy. Careful. Careful, that's it. Take it real easy now. Now run another line. Stack them 3 high now. 3 high. The wind is howling down the highway. Big white clouds piled up over the mountains. The car horns are honking for 1/2 mile back now, but we've got to get the books inside. And now we're in the office, the whole gang. There's me, and there are the others, I guess. The Teamsters, Meg, and I think even Brother Jay came by. It's all a fog. And we were stuffing envelopes and listening to whatever was on the radio. Willie Nelson, I think. The Ohio Players. So it's just a bunch of work, and there's not enough time to goof off all the time. And it's not really goofing off, anyway. It is necessary maintenance, information processing. Trying to think of what cartoon character this one boulder sort of looks like. Wondering about a new meme Instagram account. It would just be these pictures I take of the boulders, and the game is you try to figure out whatever the hell I thought I saw. Was it Walter Cronkite in profile? The alien monster? reading 25-year-old UFO reports from Russia. Flipping through piles of old books, old history books, and mining guides, and various tales of the desert. Looking for places to investigate, places to visit. Or arguing with Jeremy Corbell for an hour by text message about some arcane point regarding some release of UFO footage or etc. Because there's always something goofy in these stories. It's the thing that plants the seed of doubt while also putting a sort of spotlight on the strangeness of the event. The high strangeness, as some researchers call it. It's the factor I have come to know as the goofball factor, because that is what it is. A year and a half ago, the whole UFO thing got a lot bigger in the straight world, the square world, when the New York Times did this big front page story about the Pentagon secret UFO study program, the one that Harry Reid secretly started. It included a story that was already known in the UFO world, a world of goofballs, mostly, God bless them. And that story was about the Nimitz Aircraft Carrier Group doing some training exercises off the West Coast, and the mystery of these luminous daytime craft shaped like, of course, the Tic Tac Breath Mint. I have tried to come up with a less goofball name than the Tic Tac, but that's what everybody calls it. I tried pill-shaped, but it's not as clear. Pills can be all kinds of shapes, so it's a Tic Tac. But there was something new in the New York Times piece, apparent Pentagon confirmation of this since-canceled UFO threat study, for one thing. And a link to Bigelow Aerospace in Las Vegas, which is owned by paranormal enthusiast Robert Bigelow. This company performed certain scientific studies on alleged UFO retrieved materials or mysterious alloys. And the alloys made people sick. And then there was two videos ultimately released by someone and never for sure by the Pentagon. Those first two videos included one that was pretty compelling because it had supposedly been taken from a naval jet fighter's cockpit camera with imaging that showed the heat signature of the object, the thermal signature. And then there was the other video, which, whoops, had been earlier sitting around on the website of a German animation studio. The goofball. One of many in this story. It's a goofball that the provenance of the video is unclear, and whether or not the Pentagon officially released these two videos becomes part of the mystery. And then there's the extra weird part about the New York Times putting a freelancer on the front page, a freelancer who specializes in the UFO subject. The goofball makes you think, even when it otherwise looks like a pretty interesting story, well, it makes you think there's something fishy going on. And there's always a goofball. My new UFO documentary, which should actually be an opera. Music by John Adams. Will be called The Goofball Enigma. Has there ever been a UFO story without a goofball? It might be the craziest part of all of this. Think of a famous UFO case, Betty and Barney Hill, maybe? Now, they obviously believed something deeply strange happened to them on that New England back road. But Barney Hill wound up realizing he had seen some Hollywood-style little green men and flying saucer TV stuff before he remembered that he was brought aboard a UFO by space monsters. Was the flying saucer just a draping of personal memory over something too bizarre to have a recognizable form? I have wondered this about my own hovering black triangle situation. Yeah, there was definitely a moving and apparently intelligently controlled blob of intense light on the horizon. Yes, it zoomed from miles away to right where I was, and it hovered there off the side of the road, that evil searching spotlight coming out of its belly, looking for what? Maybe nothing. Maybe just putting on a show. And it already found what it was looking for. Me. A sucker. Something about the black triangles had appealed to me in the years previous. I recognized them as somehow legitimate. Flying saucers always looked dumb to me, which, considering the goofball factor, fits the logic board. After all, Kenneth Arnold never saw a flying saucer. He saw a fleet of boomerang-shaped metallic craft that bounced around the sky like stones skipping on a pond. Or, if you were from the Kenneth Arnold family, where tea saucers were apparently such an expendable resource that the whole gang would gather to throw them in a pond, then it was like the way a tea saucer would skip across the pond. Boy, we don't even have ponds in the Mojave. Imagine having ponds so common that you can set them aside. Entire ponds as underwater garbage dumps for your excess housewares. And that's when people started seeing flying saucers. It got imprinted on the American psyche, especially our collective consciousness. It's like Mothman. Mothman didn't look like a man dressed in some moth superhero costume, but the campy TV comedy Batman was all the rage at the time, so a newspaper editor decided that Mothman would be catchy. Mothman actually looked like a demon from hell, which it was, maybe. But it was a classic nocturnal monster. Burning red eyes, big black wings, utterly terrifying. West Virginia Black Angel from Hell. It's So I don't know if what I saw was a manta ray thing hovering and sort of breathing right there off the road within Dr. Hynek's 500 feet range, the close encounter range. What do we bring to it? Is it too awful to see on its own terms? Let's open up the Desert Oracle mailbag. Hopefully it's not just junk mail and bills and centipedes again. Here we are from C.R. Smith, I think. And C.R. Smith writes, "My uncle is a working saloon. Proficient in his field and great for recommendations." I don't have a damn clue what that is supposed to mean. The subject line says, "Old man stuff." Well, all right, let's close up the Desert Oracle mailbag and hope for something better next week. I want to tell you about a true thing that happened, and the people in my neighborhood could certainly confirm it, if you can call this a neighborhood. Some dirt roads, some potholed asphalt, a couple of Airbnbs with bridal shower parties every weekend through spring. And you know, I never had the heart to go complain to them. Let people have their last hurrah. There are houses in various states of repair, lots of open desert, thank God. And then we've got this joker across the road who has apparently inherited about a third of the inventory from that open-air appliance junkyard that used to greet our visitors to Joshua Tree. Welcome to a beautiful national park gateway town and highway junkyard. Well, this is what happened. It's a little before sunset, and what sounds like a couple of the big Marine helicopters have come low over the house, but much lower than usual. The Marine choppers come by fairly often, often at night, two or even three, flying in a line, one after another, one without lights usually, except for a small red light that you can only see once it has passed. So the whole house is rumbling, and I run out to take a look, and the damn thing is in a tight loop around this place, this property. It's barely 200 feet off the ground. Now that's maybe half as low as they usually are up here. They like to fly that east-west park boundary, headed to Camp Pendleton. It's a simple thing, but in a weakened state of mind, it can drive you to thinking they are out to get you. The pilot probably forgot something. Their phone, perhaps. So why not do a nice low loop around this one particular house and then race right back to 29 Palms. Transmissions come in many ways, weird lights in the desert brush for Moses, circles of multicolored fire in the sky for Ezekiel, a column of flame for the wanderers in the desert, baffling lights over the desert highway, the road to Damascus, the beam of pink light that set off years of strange visions and prophecies in Philip K. Dick. The Virgin of Fatima was an entity of blinding white light speaking wordlessly to three shepherd children, promising a miracle for the masses on October 13, 1917, when tens of thousands arrived at this Portuguese town on this overcast day with rain drenching the crowd as it stood in puddles in the mud. They witnessed a brilliant spinning disc overhead, an eyewitness described the encounter. This was not the sparkling of a heavenly body, for it spun round on itself in a mad whirl, when suddenly a clamor was heard from all the people. The sun whirling seemed to loosen itself from the firmament and advanced threateningly upon the earth, as if to crush us with its huge, fiery weight. The sensation during those moments was terrible. That is the testimony of attorney Jose Garrett. Reporters from Paris and London witnessed the bizarre phenomena, which included the muddy pastures and standing rainwater turning to warm, dry ground in a matter of minutes. The sodden clothing of the multitudes was instantly dried by the intense heat radiated by the spinning disc hovering just above the 40,000. Many of them recoiling from the spectacle, many more kneeling in prayer, wailing in terror. A great war, World War I, would begin the following summer. 16 million people would die in the trenches and by genocide and by starvation. Another 50 million people would lose their lives to the Spanish flu. Illumination is the beginning of enlightenment. Long before Thomas Edison claimed credit for inventing the light bulb, a beam of light or brilliant flame from a candle or lantern illustrated discovery, knowledge, wisdom, initiation. We must learn to recognize the divine, especially when it appears in mundane clothes. Václav Havel, the Czech playwright who led his nation to freedom from the Warsaw Pact and the Soviet Union, describes in Letters to Olga how he was sitting in a prison yard staring idly at a tree he had seen hundreds of times before, when the sunlight struck the leaves and the breeze in such a way that he went into a trance. He was forever changed. But not completely changed. He had already chosen the hard road. He was an acclaimed author turned human rights activist to the point that his political action robbed him of a comfortable life and it made him a prisoner in a prison yard while his nation suffocated. The encounter with the divine gave him new strength. I felt a sense of reconciliation, of an almost gentle consent to the inevitable course of things as revealed to me now. And this, combined with a carefree determination to face what had to be faced. In that moment, I would even say that I was somehow struck by love, though I don't know precisely for whom or what. Decades later, having fulfilled his destiny and returned to private life, Havel described how such encounters slumber in our collective unconscious. These experiences surface again and again in the cultural achievements of humanity and often in individual human experiences as well. In a way that we scarcely understand, they transcend what a person might know in himself or inherit from his ancestors. It seems rather as if something like an antenna were picking up signals from a physically indeterminable transmitter that contains the experience of the entire human race. If you've been out and about in Joshua Tree or Yucca Valley or the general area as of late, you might be wondering what is up with that UFO social club. All I can tell you is that it's just as advertised. It's a social club of the kind that meets at a bar on a weeknight to engage in spirited discussion of goofball topics. You know the ones. This has been Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from Joshua Tree in the Great Mojave Wilderness. Thank you for listening, and good night from the Voice of the Desert.
Thank you, Gallatin Valley, for listening. As always, you can call me and leave a message about anything on your mind. The number is 406-404-6246. Remember to spread the word that you can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgbm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Till next time, be safe, stay well, and sweet dreams.